What happens when our theology is driven by freshness instead of faithfulness? I've written an article for the latest issues, etc. journal titled New Thing Theology. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details how Bob Leeko journeyed from the Word Faith movement to faith in Christ alone. The free online Issues, etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Easter's a big holiday for Christians. We have a season devoted to it. Media coverage of it is usually just kind of fluffy stuff. How does it compare with media coverage of other major world's religions festivals? Joining us to talk about that very subject, Jim Davis. He's a former religion editor for the Sun Sentinel in South Florida, and he's a contributor to GetReligion.org. Jim, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, good to be here.
As you perused the Easter coverage in the media, did you notice a discrepancy between that coverage and the coverage of other religions' major holidays?
I found two discrepancies, actually, Todd. One is between the local media and the national or international media. The other was the discrepancy between the international media covering Easter and the national international media covering other religions. The first one was where the local media usually are very respectful toward Christian traditions. They'll cover the Good Friday services. They'll cover the resurrection services. They'll cover the concerts, usually with respect to the traditions. The national and international media usually have a tradition of their own of questioning the Easter traditions, bringing out liberal scholars to attack the traditions and giving little or no coverage to the conservative side, whereas for Diwali or Ramadan or Eid al-Adha or the birthday of the Buddha, you'll see very little or no questioning of any veracity of any of the beliefs.
What do you think accounts for that? Because that's no small discrepancy. That's a pretty major one when you consider the overall coverage of religious matters.
Oh, yeah, you betcha. I think part of it is the liberal tradition of American secular education. The idea is to question the sources and the bases of your own beliefs. A second part is the fascination with Eastern beliefs that began in my generation in the 1960s and has continued as people in my generation have become influential professors and media people. There's a kind of discrepancy between skepticism for one's own traditions and respect toward other traditions. The trouble I find with it is that there's very little critical thinking going on in newsrooms when it comes to such discrepancies. So many obvious, blatant problems get by editors and get right into newspapers and online.
In particular, you looked at some of a feature in the Washington Post. Tell us what particulars you found there, Jim.
Yeah. The Washington Post actually carried an article by the Religion News Service. So they're not totally to blame. Of course, they should have vetted the story before letting it go out, you know. One was an attempt to show that the few people who celebrate Easter shows that they don't believe the resurrection, but they really don't give any connection between the two facts. So we're just left with anecdotes and opinions. You know, that's one. Another is a reliance on non-traditional sources. For instance, there's an NYU professor who's given as an avowed non-practicing Catholic who sees that the resurrection is symbolic. The third problem is that 30% of the article is given to Bishop John Shelby Spong, who hasn't actually been an active Episcopal bishop since the year 2000 when he resigned, who's been pretty much trotting around giving his opinions ever since. In which he said that it again, it's a symbolic resurrection. Jesus was raised back into the life of God, not into the life of this world. He says the resurrection means that Jesus breaks every human limit, including the limit of death. These would have been good times for the reporter to say, what are you talking about? You know, what does that mean? How would that have shaken Lutz in the time of the first century? How would people have understood this kind of symbology? There's a problem with that. And again, there's no cross-checking with the original documents. You know, did the early Christians believe this? Did they say that that Jesus' resurrection was merely symbolic? Do we see that, for instance, in the book of Luke, where Jesus appears through walls and then says, why are you so afraid? Touch me. Look at my hands and feet. A ghost doesn't have flesh and bones as you see that I have. It's very hard to talk about a literal body of flesh and bones and then say it's simply symbolic.
Another aspect of media coverage of religion that you have noticed lately has to do with, you say there's a little game you can play sometimes with headlines like the one you found, anti-gay activists celebrate Mississippi religious freedom law. The game, you say, is spot the code words. What code words and what little cues in both the headline and the lead did you find that let you on to where this coverage was probably headed of a very important subject, religious freedom?
Oh, yeah, there were just so many. I simply posted a screenshot as art for my story there. In the upper left-hand corner, you had the word Equality Society, which apparently was a department under which the MSNBC had put this article, Anti-Gay Activists Celebrate Mississippi Religious Freedom Law. First off, there's equality. Well, who is against equality? That's to start with, a little gaming of terms in favor of the apparent opinion of MSNBC itself. Second is the headline, Anti-Gay Activists. If you're anti-something, you're on the wrong side of something. You're the villain. You're not the good guy. Then it talks about anti-gay activists celebrate Mississippi, quote, religious freedom, unquote, law. In Get Religion, we call those scare quotes, where religious freedom in quotes is supposed to be a sarcastic comment because it really means the opposite, at least in the opinion of the writer and apparently their editors. Then in the lead, it says Mississippi quietly passed its religious freedom law. Again, religious freedom is in quotes. Quietly passes a little indicator that it was done under the table, under everybody's noses, and in the opinion of the writer or his editor, somebody should have caught that. Then it said it prompted alarm, an emotional reaction, you know, again, sympathy for one side, alarm from gay and lesbian rights activists. Once again, when you're talking about rights activists, then their opponents are obviously against rights. So again, this is gaming of terms, and we haven't even gotten past the first paragraph of the article.
Now, had they simply said gay rights activists or advocates of traditional marriage or advocates of traditional gender roles or something like that, would have that have balanced it out? Or is there a way in the parlance and the code, so to speak, of today's coverage of this kind of issue to even balance a term like gay rights activists?
Yeah, that probably would have helped. If they had said gay rights activists and then traditional marriage activists, that might have moderated some. If they had said simply gay and lesbian activists, that would have worked. You know, but to say somebody one side is for rights and another one is against rights is an attempt to slant the news.
Does the coverage that you found elsewhere, does it make similar mistakes, missteps, or do you find some balance in other coverage of the same story?
I find very little balance in the kind of coverage. Whenever there is gay activism in, say, Arizona, Mississippi, or California, or other places, usually media, especially online media, tend to pick up one another's parlance and they repeat it. There's very little critical thinking going on. And I think it's because, again, it's the liberal mindset that everybody deserves rights. Religion shouldn't enter into the public discourse except for excoriation.
Now, is this egregious enough, in your opinion, that the story's not actually, it's not just a matter of kind of speaking in code and editors either permitting it or not catching it? Or do you think it crosses the line into not accurately covering the story, not even getting what the actual story is?
I'm not sure I see a difference. When you pick and choose the words that will make people favor one side of the story, I think that's a violation of accuracy in itself.
So you say this: when journalists try to shade and prod and redefine, they desert their stated journalistic goal of informing us and imparting understanding. What do you mean by that, Jim?
I mean that as a Scripps Howard, you know, the late lamented Scripps Howard slogan used to be, give the people light, give them light, and the people will find their own way. You know, in four decades of religion writing for a mainstream newspaper, I always tried to give both sides. I tried to avoid aiming it on one side or another. My stories then weren't as controversial, weren't as bloody, didn't catch as much fire. But I think I gave people the equipment to decide for themselves. To do anything else is to go from informing to editorializing to opinionating, and it's a disservice to the reading public.
So since you're new to Get Religion, give us kind of your perspective on this. After sitting at the religion desk for all those years, looking out on the current coverage of religion by the media, you don't sound like you're particularly hopeful for improvement in the future.
No, I'm not particularly optimistic on this, Todd. One is that specialists, again, I'm not talking about just my own job, but a lot of specialists have been laid off. I don't think it's like a jihad against religion. I think it's just that a lot of specialists in all kinds of beats are being laid off in newspapers. But what happens then is that non-specialists get assigned to stories, and specialized information tends to elude them, and they miss a perspective. They then fall back on the prevailing attitudes of influential liberal groups that and secularist groups that don't have a particular interest in unbiased, balanced reporting. So, no, I think I don't see that we've hit the bottom yet. I won't make a prophecy for the long term, but we have a ways to go. And one of the reasons I valued joining Get Religion was the chance to dissect and point out and call attention to the signs of bias, in the hopes that some consciousness will be stung a little.
Jim Davis is a former religion editor for the Sun Sentinel in South Florida and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Jim, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you. Good to be here.
When we come back in the next hour of Issues, Etc., we're going to spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker. The movie's out, Heaven is for Real. Of course, it's based on a book that came out several years ago. We thought, not a bad time to go back and simply review what that book actually claimed. Often the movie versions of books change things a little bit, simplify them. We'll review the book, Heaven is for Real, with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel in the second hour of the program. And we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Stay tuned.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.